On page 16 of your evidence, point 31, you say openness is not necessarily legally thought to be maintained. Does that mean it can be legally maintained?
Not the only exclusive, but part of the package in terms of the old case.
So I think the district debate at the moment threatens the openness and natural character, which is as far as the O and L goes. So the visual immunity or cover for rural landscape openness, we say, isn't necessarily the attribute of the landscape, the planting particularly, which doesn't maintain openness.
Are you referring only to the Lost Puppy Basin when you make that comment? Not the entire district.
Yes.
Because you do say open is not necessarily the value sort of maintained in certain rural areas. For example, where vegetation is a more dominant element of the landscape, if it is more dominant, then obviously openness is not a characteristic. So, wondering if you would accept that perhaps openness, where it is present in the rural area, is something that should be recognised. That in that, when I asked the same question of Mr. Baxter, he said that yes, he thought it was, and also yes, that the ODP had succeeded in doing so.
So my suggested wording deletes openness and reduced views, and I felt that that was a more providing a direction to what we're trying to do.
But a view's in or a view's out? And is it just a view? Because you can have a view shaft, like looking through that window of a view of a Norfolk Pine Remarkables, but that's not open. So aren't they actually quite different from... Because you acknowledge that openness is something in an OLR only, and that's not just restricted to view.
That's right.
But also...
But the policy is related to... avoiding planting and screening, particularly along roads and boundaries.
Yes, but there's, I mean, even in Lost Puppy Basin, you take that route of running the road, including the station, planting along there. Would you encourage planting along
no,
there?
No.
And that's a matter of openness, isn't it?
That's right. I want to provide a view to the O&L.
But even without the view to the O&L, it's still a matter of openness.
Yeah.
Foreground is not just the background, and the foreground is actually the openness, it's that character, not just... So the question comes back to is, you acknowledge, I think, that there is such a thing as openness, that it's particularly in O&L, and that it's something more, perhaps, than just views. So, coming back to your suggestion on paragraph 83, someone else has suggested, can't be exactly with the maintenance of openness where that is a character, where it's present. Would that be a good solution?
The only confrontation I have is openness is a characteristic. It needs to be linked to something, because something can be open, but maintaining that openness doesn't necessarily need to be...
We'll take the upper cliff. Take how we are flat. Isn't that one of the defining characteristics of the landscape of how we are flat?
Yes.
So, would the plan not seek to retain that characteristic? To the extent that it's important. But does your policy, as you reworded it, get you to that point?
I agree. I think my concern is with its applicability in all instances. So.
But isn't that where it is currently present? Sorry, I haven't got exactly the right words, but it's something along the lines of protection of openness where it is currently open. Which would take away from your paragraph 81, where vegetation is a more dominant element, i.e. in those areas of rural lifestyle and residential primarily, where there is already a dominant element of vegetation, etc., then that is no longer an open landscape. And so people with that.
Well, open landscape, I guess there's a distinction there. Something can be open. So you can have a shelter belt and then open paddocks behind that, and further planting within those paddocks may be appropriate, which will reduce the openness. So I think that's really, so you're talking about an open landscape.
So you're saying you would be more comfortable with the word in open landscape than openness?
Yes. I think it needs to relate to the qualities of the landscape.
Thank you. And one more. On the second page of your appendix B, and this kind of coming back to ask you a bit more clarification on a question I've asked before, you have protect the quality of the outstanding natural landscapes here from an appropriate subdivision. It's changed that. Is that your appendix B?
Yes.
Under objective 3251, have you subsequently changed that?
So where it says amendment, it follows protect the quality of the outstanding natural landscape.
I mean, objective 3251 as follows protect the quality of the outstanding natural landscape.
I think Commissioner McGill will have the quality is the insertion by the section 42A report.
Okay, that's
Mr.
right.
Mr. Williams' insertion was the inappropriate.
Thank you.
Still, the question I would like to ask. In terms of inappropriate and quality, you've already said that that should be defined further in Chapter 6. Have you got any guidance as to how the plan should define quality?
The current plan provides quite a framework for evaluating those matters in our analysis.
And some of the things like difficult to see, I think it was, have been taken out. Do you think some of those assessment matters should be put back in terms of, and or should the qualities that are trying to be protected by the plan be defined?
I think it's helpful to provide more guidance on that. Yeah.
In terms of both quality and assessment matters?
Yeah, I think it's helpful to understand what the particular qualities of the outstanding natural landscape are that you want to. And I think the current plan helps with that.
So you and in terms of assessment matters also?
For the current assessment matters, I haven't looked at the proposed ones in great detail but recently, I did look at them again yesterday. And so they sort of simplify and refine what was there before, I think, and drop. I mean, I know the current regime gets a hard time because it's seen as very complex and maybe a little bit cumbersome, but it's quite a complex issue to deal with, and I think the way it works in terms of trying to deal with what those qualities are and give you some guidance is quite helpful.
So, fundamentally, it sounds like you're saying that the ODP has worked to date with the assessment matters, even if they are
reclined. Yeah, I think it's not an easy issue to really get right, particularly landscape, because it is so varied and But I think the current government plan did a pretty good job when I look back at it. And I think the monitoring report council did itself and seemed to suggest that it was that bad. But we've sort of thrown it out and started again, which I guess we do that, but I'm not sure why, what was so wrong with what we had that led down this track.
So, okay, thank
you. As I noted at the beginning of the hearing, I don't have anything further to add to my legal submissions, but I would just note, following the question from Commissioner Robinson to Mr. Williams about the terms protection and management, that I concur with his opinion that they're not synonymous. And I did try to find the reference specifically in the case, but I do know in the Wesi case, the 180/99 decision, that does consider those terms, and it does acknowledge they're not synonymous, and talks about the ordinary definition of managed, which is to handle, direct, govern, or control in action or use, whereas protection means preservation from injury or harm.
Wonder if I could clarify. My question was, is there a difference between protection and maintenance? And I think Commissioner Gilmore might have tossed in management as a third link of the chain. So I wonder if, like, I understand exactly where you're coming from on management, but I wonder if you could address the difference between protection and maintenance.
Yes, well, not specifically reference to cases, but Mr. Williams did mention in his view that management was, in his view, inclusive of the term maintenance. Avoid, remedy, and mitigate has been often referred to as management. And so then if you were to take that further, then it would lead to the conclusion that the two are different terms, and not to be viewed as one and the same.
Thank you.
Just Rob. Well, I was just going to check that you were happy to take questions on your submissions rather than...
Certainly.
Thank you. Ms. Rob, I think paragraph 3.4 characterising purpose of sustainable management, which is by its nature enabling. Obviously, the definition in section 5.2 starts with a concern term enabling. The question for you is, given the Supreme Court's emphasis that protection is a fundamental element of the definition, because it says enabling use, development, and protection. Do you think that that submission might be overbroad, unless you say it's enabling protection?
Oh, I think that's a fair comment. It could go, it could acknowledge that it's enabling protection.
And if it's enabling protection, then the trick is to identify what has to be protected and in what circumstances.
Yes, and I think that's really the position we've got to today, following your questions to Mr. Williams, is that it's certainly been our case that there are areas that should be afforded protection in the ONL, ONM areas. But our concern with the plan, as the way it was drafted, is that that it was, it really could be assumed broadly that it was preventing development in all those areas. And whereas when we looked at the background assessment and information, particularly Dr. Reed's report, it quite clearly identified that there are areas that could absorb further change in O&Ls, and but then that didn't flow through into the drafting of the provisions. And you know, specifically when we were looking at that quite specific policy raised by Commissioner Gilmore, that there does need to be more of a split, though, so that there's a direction that there are specific areas where development should be avoided and there's the protection, but then there needs to be the enabling policies as well that recognise those areas that can absorb change. And I think that's really the crux of our case, and although some of the drafting, you know, it appears that we're agreed on that principle, and then we need to turn our minds to how we can achieve that in the policies.
Now, thank you for that. In terms of your point 311, which is really where you're capturing what you just made, you see the restrictive provisions related to O&Ls, IMFLs as you call them, do not appear to be justified with reference to those factors which are being protected. So my question is that if protection were referenced to the factors contributing to better term, the outstandingness of the landscape, would you support that approach?
You're referring, in that the objective itself would refer to the outstandingness criteria?
Because as we've discussed, every landscape is going to have different reasons why it's outstanding in terms of the Pigeon Bay criteria. If protection were directed to the characteristics or the factors that made that landscape outstanding, would that be one way to address the issue you've identified? And would you support it?
So I think, I'm not necessarily sure that gets us there. The Pigeon Bay, or the modified Pigeon Bay criteria referred to in the Wessie decision, that is the analysis for identifying the O&Ls. But then really what I think we're saying is that it's those areas of the O&Ls that have no capacity or little capacity to absorb change that need to be protected. So it's that component that should be referenced rather than the criterion for identifying the O&Ls.
Well, the determination of the areas that should absorb change, or whether the landscape character would be degraded, requires first some sort of determination of what the characteristics are that define that landscape.
Yes, I think that's right. So I'm not saying that you wouldn't have an identification of that character, but just that it needs to be linked back to whether it's an O&L that provided that it flows down, that it's those characters that are the areas that don't have the potential to absorb change.
Or will not be degraded. Because from memory, without looking at it, the policy had two parts to it. It was not degrading the landscape character and also being in a location able to absorb change.
Yes, that's right, it did. I suppose just the point I'm making is I think it would be helpful to have further direction, provided that it's framed in that way, that it's that you are identifying characters that then link back to whether it should be protected because it's going to be degraded or it has little or no capacity to absorb change.
Moving on, your paragraph 4.9, referencing the premise of the Act, which is inherently and intentionally effects-based. Now, coming to the chase, your colleague, Ms. Baker Galloway, used an almost identical statement, and I put to her, or I put a question to her, as to whether there is any authority that says that, that the Act is only effects-based and cannot be utility-based. And she wasn't aware of any, so my question is, are you?
No, I'm not aware of any either.
Now, in relation to the following paragraph, 4.10, you're drawing a distinction here between vowels and ORLs. This goes back to the history of the ODP. My understanding from reading those cases is that the Environment Court found that it had no jurisdiction to identify where the vowels were and where the ORLs were. Is that right? So it sort of became one of those amorphous things that at some point one moved into the other.
That it had no jurisdiction to identify the boundaries between O and L and VAL?
The other way, on the bottom end, between VALs and ORLs.
On the basis that they hadn't been sufficiently tested in the evidence.
I think that was how I read it.
Yes.
Is that your understanding?
Yes, that's my understanding, is that that there was some general comment on that, but, and I think that was the basis for even with the O&Ls having the bold lines and the dashed lines, that there were just certain parts that there was no evidence presented in the hearings on the references, so that there was sufficient information to make findings of fact.
Thank you, Ms. Roth. Those are all of you,
in 4.5, just the part in Dr. Reed's report that identifies those areas, do you happen to have a reference for that?
The table that she has attached to her report.
Is that the report on the Watkinsville Basin, rather than the report on the O&Ls?
Sorry, I'll just refresh my memory with that paragraph. Yes, so it's June 2014 report, Appendix 1, Summary of Landscape Character Analysis.
In 4.7, there have just been contrary to proper plan development. Could you expand a bit on what's the proper plan development, please?
Well, the whole process, really. The analysis that's required to be undertaken, it appeared from that comment in the report that there may have been some direction provided before the preparation of that report, and then which would then come before the Section 32 analysis. So when I'm referring to proper plan development, I'm really referring to the whole process, which then informs the finding.
Can you really take that from that statement? Couldn't, I mean, isn't it a suggestion that if the council sought to slow down subdivision, then it would need to do that thing?
That's the way that I've interpreted it, but it may be that wasn't the case, but it seemed when reading the report that there may have been an predetermination there, but perhaps not.
Wouldn't Dr. Reed, if she was instructed to consider that proposition, wouldn't she have said, I've been asked to consider how to slow subdivision in the Waikato Basin?
Well, I can't speak for Dr. Reed.
Well, yes, I know, but if you had been instructed to do it, you would say clearly that you had been instructed. Opinion as to one way of doing something.
Perhaps. I think really the point I was trying to make is that, which was referred to by Mr. Williams as well, is that when you look at the monitoring report, didn't seem to be, apart from the reference about cumulative effects, there didn't really seem to be any strong identification of issues in it. Coming out of the current regime.
Perhaps that's why it's expressed in that way.
Mm.
But having considered the effect of the terms Arcadian landscape, he's suggested that may have led to development, that if the council sought to stop that development, then remove that form of it.
Well,
I recall the report she actually had, before she came to that conclusion, done some analysis of the effect of that provision in the plan on the Waikato Basin.
So you're saying that as a result of that preceding report, then she came to the view, then council came to the view that...
No, I'm saying that she came to the view, it's her opinion, it's not the council's opinion.
Yes, well, she's saying it's my opinion that if there is a desire, yes. Mm. And it was that wording, if there is a desire, which seemed to indicate that there may be a desire by council to do that. That was really what I was highlighting, rather than her opinion as to removing the reference to Arcadia.
On 559, where you're referring to the above policy that it anticipates an environmental outcome rather than a policy criteria, so do you think it's more, is it more like an objective?
I think it's certainly more like an objective, but whether it's appropriate to have it as an objective, well, that was a matter that we take issue with.
Okay, thank you.
at your 3.8 paragraph, your final sentence in that, does that suggest that you are happy with the Environment Court O&L line as decided, and if that body of jurisprudence were used to determine O&L throughout the district, you would be satisfied? That that's the appropriate way of putting it.
So with respect to the first question, happy with the O&L lines as determined. I think, well, depending, some of the cases I think should be relied on for determining the O&L lines, but it really depends to what extent each case has really tested the location of the line, because some cases they really tested parts of the line and then just the line flowed on out of the ends of those. And so I do think that with each case where the O&L has been determined, it would be good to go back and have a look at the testing for that line. And it may be that there have been circumstances that have changed which then would open the door to revisit that line.
Isn't the hearing that's got planned the opportunity through the submissions to do that reconsideration?
Yes.
And so the evidence that we receive on those lines can lead us to a conclusion as to whether they need to be adjusted or not.
That's right. So I think, as I understood the question, it's whether happy with the case law that has defined the O&L lines, and I suppose and my answer to that is, well, it depends on the case, and it may be that the panel should reconsider where those lines are, rather than just defer to the or look to the environment.
We have to look at submissions, but if there are no submissions on the lines,
well, then it's a question of jurisdiction. Pardon?
If there are no submissions seeking an adjustment of a particular part of the line, then we don't need to. A, we have no jurisdiction.
Yes,
but B, we have no need to consider them, because then we can accept that the community at large has accepted that.
Yes, I think I agree with that. I just understood the question to be a bit more personal in terms of whether I actually think that those cases could be relied on. Qualify that by, provided it's an issue and it is before the panel to consider.
Thank you.
So I think there was a second part to that question.
You've pretty much covered it. Your 4.1 paragraph. You say, in instances of conflict between provisions, the High Order chapter is of vital importance as the purpose of the panel used to colour the interpretation of any conflict in the lower order provision. We've already, with Mr. Williams, proposed the debate regarding in terms of structure and whether Chapter 3 should just be objective rather than policy. Do you think that the chapter as written, like Chapter 3, provides enough guidance to give order to that conflict, should there be conflict in our chapter? And in terms of which objectives of competing ones should be given prominence? Because that seems to be what you're trying, what you're saying, is what the strategic direction should be achieved.
Yes, painting the overall picture and then ensuring that it is consistent with the lower order provision.
Do you think it achieves
that? Not as notified, and that it certainly needs to be amendments. I was thinking when you were discussing about just whether there an option is to have just the objectives in Chapter 3 and then the policies in the other lower order chapters. And I just thought, actually, from an administrative point of view and a practical point of view, it would be quite difficult to work with the plan in that respect when you're, I think, when you're referring to an objective and then need to see how that objective is going, the methods for achieving that objective, that then you're looking to another chapter and working with a plan like that. I think overall the structure is actually probably better that you do have some policy direction under that objective, but then it's finer grained in the lower order chapters. But there is obviously quite a challenge in ensuring that there's consistency. But obviously that's what we're here for.
You then at the bottom of that paragraph 4.1 say, thus it is important that Chapter 3 provides an overall picture of the district's economic resources. Why only economic resources?
Sorry, what chapter?
Your paragraph 4.1. Very last sentence.
I was only referring to economic resources there because I was specifically under the umbrella of recognising tourism, because I think, you know, there's already a lot of recognition of the other resources. So I was making the point that really that there needs to be the inclusion or more specific recognition of economic resources.
Over the page in volume 4.4, you mentioned the assessment that I referred to before in terms of reasonably difficult to see. In your opinion, would that kind of assessment tool be useful to improve?
Oh, I think it has. Yes, I think it would be.
Thank you. In terms of final page, on end of the slide, we're going to start at 5.9. Do you agree that the district does have finite capacity in terms of rules?
Yes, I think it does. But I just maintain the view that I don't think it's helpful to include it in this district.
Notwithstanding,
that's a Section 7 matter? Yes. I think you can have particular, you know, the Section 7 is directing you to have particular regard to that, but it doesn't necessarily mean it needs to be lifted into the district plan. Mm-hmm. And I just think the way that it will be, although we can have the discussion as to what that means in light of Section 7 and then the overall broad judgment under part two, in terms of people picking up the plan from a practical perspective, I think it sends a signal that we're close to that finite capacity, and I just don't think that that's the direction that should be given at this point.
So your 5.10, you mentioned that the system needs to be able to see what people to join that two generations within a minimum period to consider. I'm not quite clear as to what you're meaning by that paragraph. Are you meaning that you believe that that finite capacity is actually outside of two generations, or that we should provide more policies to ensure that we don't reach that capacity within the next two generations? What are you suggesting? Or are you suggesting we should just be silent on finite capacity terms?
I think that the plan should be silent at this point. But obviously, I think you need to have regard to it because it is a finite resource.
So why be silent on something that you acknowledge?
Well, possibly you don't want to be silent on it, but then there needs to be more direction as to, I suppose another the point is, more direction as to what it means and when we might reach that point. I think it will be open to a lot of argument and debate, otherwise not necessarily being very efficient in terms of hearings and consent applications.
Your final sentence, accordingly it is not the most appropriate regime to achieve the Purpose of the Act. Are you suggesting that we throw that out and start again, or that amendments that you suggest be adequate? Or that...
Yes, well certainly not. That needs to be thrown out. Really, that was just a summary of the position that we've got to today. Is that and the theme of our case is that there needs to be more of a balance, and we've explored some of those options today, and it might not necessarily be the amendments that we've proposed, but that there does need to be some amendment to recognise or to have more of a balanced regime.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have nothing further.
Sorry, I hope it's okay if we stand up, just that we've sort of got a little dialogue right between ourselves. It's much easier if we kind of see each other.
Rather than your visual people,
we are.
Pope and Pete Ritchie, and we represent 18 people. And we, as a group of architects, urban designers, and landscape architects, we, when the first district plan was notified, we held a series of workshops between ourselves, probably between 10 and 15, and we holistically took apart the whole district plan and reassembled it. And we're a skilled professional group, we feel, and we all practice and work in this region. And we believe our submission is really, really important because we're editing it not from just visual effects, but we've got a holistic view, and it's about enhancing the social well-being of our community, and we believe that from that the economic benefits accrue. And our only self-interest is that we care deeply about our area. And we wish to continue and to live in a beautiful place. We hope our children can continue to live in a beautiful place such as this. And what came out amongst all our discussions, and they were wide-ranging and varied, but in the end they came back to five very key points. And we think these issues are really relevant in all aspects of Japan. And these five points are urban growth boundaries, transport capacity, the fact that Frankton is a twin centre to the Queenstown Waterfront Centre, that we need to promote quality in all areas of planning, landscape and built environment, and that the rural areas need to stay rural. So, number one, we really do believe that urban growth boundaries need to be just that. They need to be distinct and defendable. We think there's plenty of capacity in the already zoned areas, and that's been shown by various supporting documents of the council. And we need to stay strong about this fact because it's essential that we create an integrated, denser environment. It's going to be better for live, work and play. It's going to be, if we provide a quality environment, it's going to be a great place to live. It's going to be affordable because you're not worrying about transport issues. And it's much better than subdividing suburban paddocks. And it just works so much better. And there's plenty of examples around the world why this works. And it just locates the community. But of course, to make this successful, we need great transport. And transport. Don't think about that.
Transport, I mean, is integral to the whole strategic direction of the plan.
talk about Frankton. We're booming at the moment. What's happening here? We've got, you know, we've got pressure coming this way from Lakehays Estate and all that stuff. We've got pressure coming in from this direction, from Jack's Point, Henley Down. We're going to have pressure from this way when the high school starts. We've got air pressure. We've got, what, 1 million, 2 million people more coming in here. What's happening? I mean, have you guys had a look at the council model? Do you know what's going to happen in 2017, 18 when our kids start high school? Can they get to school on time? Can people get out of the airport? I mean, have you really been looking at the council model? Like, do you know? Do you know well, that in 2018?
I'm not
your
councillor,
sorry.
Oh, okay.
No, and I'll interrupt. The transport planning is not part of this part of the district plan, so yep. we haven't looked at transport.
Yeah, we understand that. But I guess that's one of our key issues, then.
It's very hard to get a strategy without the transport, you know, and understand how that's flowed down. It's a very, very key part of it, and it's sort of like back to front, in our opinion. Yeah.
We could then just move on to Frankton, because the whole planning around Frankton.
Well, there were some issues we were going to talk about, and that was the airport, because we think the airport is also an issue of growth. It's another transport zone, and we've said that maybe, you know, I've heard that there's only 10% capacity of the airport being utilised at this point. Mm-hmm. So what happens when the other 90% is taken up, and what will the effects of that be, and how are we planning for that, and do we just keep promoting growth in tourism and growth in the airport? Has that really been addressed in this plan? Because, you know, we do say we want to promote growth in tourism. De facto, the airport. So, really, how are we actually going to make that work?
I think we've got the airport, and we've got a community which surrounds the airport. And it's really important that the airport and the community can work together, because, you know, we just don't want the airport to take over the Frankton community, because Frankton is a place. It's more than just a roundabout. I mean, all traffic from all parts of the district come to the Frankton corner. Frankton is a place where you've got a fantastic lake edge, which has not really been fully discovered yet. You've got a mix of a residential development between the state highway and that lake edge, which could have incredible development potential as mixed use, as high density living. And it'd be a real shame if the airport could put the brakes on something as important as that and such an important part of this district. You know, Frankton is a place where we've got the event centre, we've got a golf course, we've got the Lake Edge parks, we've got the high school moving out there. It is so important that this area is well planned and well considered as a landscape of possibility and opportunity, really. You've got the state highway which bisects Frankton, but there's opportunity of you know, kids walking from the event centre under that road or over the road to get to those lake edges, to get to the trails and to get to the links. There's a fantastic series of trails and links which could be well integrated.
It's all about quality of design, isn't it? It's about, you know, taking all those.
That's right, and this plan's definitely got a big focus on landscape quality, there's no doubt about that, but we want to ensure that there is urban quality also within the plan.
But I don't think that the landscape quality and urban quality, there's no difference. You see, landscape doesn't just stop at the edge. Landscape is not just something which just happens in the country. Landscape comes right into the urban fabric, and I think it's got to be well recognised, because, you know, and that's just part of getting these links. In considering,
and it's part of our incredible quality that we've got, you know, views, and I mean, we are part of the landscape. Wherever we live, we're in the landscape, and it's really important that you know, the synergy between the two, and we're the jewel in the crown. There's no doubt about it. You know, we pride ourselves. We're international brands, and if densification's not going to be successful, we need a high quality built environment. And we need to, and this quality is achievable through promoting urban design principles, urban design review boards, and design guidance at all levels. And, you know, we need to stop judging the landscape purely on visual qualities, because densification of the landscape has ripple effects throughout the whole district in terms of connectivity, congestion, and homogenification of the whole area. You know, we just really need that rural needs to stay rural. You know, the farming landscape is just really a cultural construct that we've put on it. We all know what rural means, really. And, you know, we've just been totally distracted with these techniques of people talking about a word, you know, a definition or things like that. We actually understand the difference between rural and urban. And we just think the plan, quality planning, is just going to should reinforce that. It shouldn't be a distraction of people saying, no, pick me, no, I've got an acre here, an acre there. Pick me.
Oh, I've got 50 acres, or 250 acres.
Yes. You know, we should really support, strengthen, and develop within our urban growth boundaries. They're pretty big, and there's a lot of capability within that, and that will make us, and continue to make us, special.
Mm. In many ways, I think we're actually quite fortunate that places like Remarkables Park and Calvin Heights and things have not been significantly developed when they could have been up until now, because we sort of understand that there's, you know, more growth pressure than we possibly ever anticipated. And having those areas still as greenfield areas means that, you know, we can look at that in a whole higher density, as opposed to just putting you know, an 800 square metre site with a brick and tile house on it right over that landscape. So we've got an amazing opportunity now with what we have, with resources we do have.
Within the boundaries.
Within the boundaries.
So
just to go through the detail here, which we've modified, so strategic direction. Just, I'm not going to read through the whole thing, but the highlighted red are our words. So the differences to the purpose, we need to think we add vibrant and compact town centres that are well-designed, high-quality urban environments, and compact and connected urban areas defined by urban growth boundaries. We feel that supports our principle. Remember, urban growth boundaries, transportation, twin centres, quality and rural. Also, just an innovative and diversifying economy based around a strong visitor industry and higher value jobs and industries. Like, I think, you know, we shouldn't be just about tourism, it's about diversification. We think that it would be helpful to call it Queenstown Waterfront and Wanaka Waterfront and wider Frankton, just to be very clear about the three areas that we're talking about. They should all be defined by urban growth boundary. And we think we agree with the new objective about recognising wider Frankton, and we wish that it will help be recognised with quality development, connectivity that promotes its identity as a recreational community and transport hub for the district.
So you're wanting to add in the word community?
Community, yes, thanks. And we feel there should be a new objective, which is plan for good design and all development. We're talking about a lot of objectives for the landscape. How about some objectives for quality design? And we feel that in the objective ensure urban development occurs in a logical manner, we need to reinforce the urban growth boundary. So a further bullet point, that further urban development within the district occurs within urban growth boundaries. And just to support the principles of urban design, we ensure development responds to the site, street, open space and surrounding area by consideration of context, character, choice, connections, creativity, custodianship and collaboration. I don't think that you can cherry pick just character and context. I think all those are relevant. And just goes on to our view of the landscape. So we feel we should avoid, remedy or mitigate the effects of subdivision use and development on these landscapes. And there's been a lot of movement around 3.2.5.3.1. I think you just say urban development is directed to occur within urban growth boundaries or within existing rural townships. I think that's very clear and good quality planning. And we would like to add quality to 3.2.6 objective, enable access to quality housing that's more affordable. We don't think that affordable housing should lack quality.
So what number was that one?
3.2.6 on page 9. In applying plan provisions, we have regard to the extent which minimum size, density, height, building coverage and other quality controls.
Sorry,
3.2.6.1.2.
Have you got colour? Yeah, the colour has gone. That was my problem.
Okay.
And so also your one underneath is realised.
Oh, no, that was actually the purple. That was from the last night's iteration.
Okay, so it's 3.2.6.1.2 that you've added quality.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And in 3.2.6.4.1, I think if council can recognise fitness in design, they can recognise well-being and the New Zealand Urban Design Protocol.
Sorry, what's that one? 3.2.6.4.1.
Ensure council-led and private environment
Missing page 10. We have to mind for you.
Missing page 10. Oh, dear. Okay.
So we're going to list the one.
Ensure council-led and private design and development of public spaces and built development maximises public safety and well-being by adopting crime prevention through environmental design and the New Zealand Urban Design Protocol.
That's the well-being of the Urban Design Protocol.
Now, we are signatory to the Urban Design Protocol. Okay? We are the second community in New Zealand to adopt it. And I think we should continue to recognise it and strengthen it. That helps our goals of achieving well-designed, integrated urban communities and good quality. So, I'll do about the missing page.
Well,
page.
Then we've got Ms. Cameron's done a lot.
Yeah. Okay. So, if I go on to...
So, can I interrupt you just while you're talking about that, seeing as I'm missing it here, I might forget, the New Zealand Urban Design Protocol, we called it. Oh, thank you. Is that referred to anywhere else in terms of the
plan? It was referred to in the previous district plan.
And it's not in the
seemed to be that we found it in the new district plan.
And so you feel it should be?
Well, we do believe it should be. It was a big part of Plan Change 10 when we did amenity and high density areas. We introduced a huge amount of urban design criteria. These seem to got diminished in the new district.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as growth becomes denser, the quality and the design becomes more important, would be the same, right?
Yes. So just to move on to 4, which is urban development, it's not just the landscape, but built environment that's important. We've just made a few urban growth boundaries are established for the key areas of Queenstown, Wanaka and Arrowtown, because we've introduced Brampton. So just want to just... And we just feel we should add that it contributes to more compact and connected urban forms that offer a quality environment to live, work and play. If we create these urban growth boundaries, we're creating live, work and play centres in a more connected community. And 4.2.1.2, just an addition there about the urban growth boundary, including planned expansion to accommodate growth within urban areas. So the idea is that you expand your infrastructure within the urban growth boundary, not beyond the urban growth boundary, and that's supported. And 4.2.1.6, avoid sporadic urban development. Don't keep trying to explain it. Just leave it as a policy, and it works. As soon as you start to try and rationalise, explain, and give its boundaries, it diminishes that policy. Just avoid it, because that's what the urban growth boundary is about. And again, we've just made some deletions, and we believe 4.2.3.7, we should manage urban and rural areas at the edges of the urban growth boundaries as a distinct and defendable boundary. I feel that's important that it's left in.
not just a spill.
And then I've added a further bullet point at the very end. To ensure transition to rural areas occurs within boundaries. It's always a really difficult thing to say, well, where does this transition occur? Well, if it occurs within the boundary, then there's no question that beyond the boundary, it's rural. It's not to be living away with people close to or nearby.
So that boundary you're referring to is the UGB as opposed to someone else's boundary?
Yes, I suppose it's an urban growth boundary, yes. 4.2.3.8 is about the airport. It's very important. We do not want to prohibit or limit all the activities sensitive to aircraft noise, because that would prohibit everything in Frankton and Calvin Heights and beyond. You know, yes, you can control the inner boundary, but the outer boundary is what it is. You know, we're there, the zoning is there, and who's got the rights, the airport or the community? You need to really think about this, because the community must have some rights in this. So we're saying land use within the outer control boundary is managed to minimise the adverse effects. So you can manage the adverse effects, but you can't prohibit or limit them. And then we're just talking about what we, first of all, Frankton, wider Frankton, it's a recreational and serves public strengthened. Ensure development within the Queenstown urban growth boundary. Achieves a high quality urban environment responsive to the context of its surroundings, is respectful of view shafts, and enhances and promotes a significant landscape feature of Horn Creek through Gorge Road mixed use area in the town centre. I feel quite passionate about this. You know, we have a distinctive landscape. We keep looking at the mountains. We've got a great area in Horn Creek. We've talked about special qualities of Arrowtown and Wanaka, but Horn Creek often gets missed out. And yet we've done some marvellous work with Horn Creek in the centre of town, in the village square and around the Ngāi Tahu building. That work and opening up of Horn Creek as an urban edge needs to be strengthened and maintained, and I think will become very significant as Queenstown expands up Gorge Road. So I feel personally that this really needs to be included here and does not diminish the qualities of other significant landscapes and water features. And then just by way of interest, you know, we submitted this about the urban growth boundary. Some pictures that we had done. It's about connectivity, it's about the urban growth boundary and managing connection to actually integrate that urban growth boundary with Lake Hayes State and shot over country. You know, how cleverly have we thought about this urban growth boundary and the use of water and rivers and bridges? It's not just about roads. So that was a possible expansion. I mean, these not, you know, we've done it the same for Wanaka. We've got lots of areas within it and outer and developed at a later time. Forward thinking for Frankton. And again, 4.2.6.2, we want to put into Wanaka, achieves a high quality urban environment responsive to the context of its surroundings. We just feel we need to emphasise that quality. And then just moving on to landscapes, I think we need to stop talking about productive land and farming land. It's rural land. As I said, farming's a cultural construct, but before that it was something else and something else, but it's open rural landscape. It's the one key element. The open character of rural land is the one key element of landscape character which can be vulnerable, etc. So that's point we've got on that, and really we just think you should avoid urban subdivision and urban development in rural zones and just leave it at that. Again, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about development and meeting the demand of the town by developing these paddocks. We don't believe that's good quality design. We believe strengthening our boundaries and infilling and putting the pressure on people to build and develop cleverly and densify.
There's already a lot of zoned land
within the district, which has got a lot of capability for absorbing a lot of data.
That's right. So, I won't go through all the landscape one, because really if you buy into rural development, rural stays rural, then this becomes an almost obsolete area, just saying, okay, we'll just leave it. Because when you think about it, this plan only lasts for 10 years. And if we just could focus on inside the urban growth boundary rather than outside, it would be great if we could just strengthen and build on central town. Then another 10 years, maybe you look at the rural area, see what needs to be managed or expanded on the boundary. You know, we're at a tipping point. You know, do we really want to... Do we want to create an environment that's rich in character, has a lovely distinct edge, has rural areas, and has incredible built environment landscapes?
Yeah, or do we want a suburb walking different?
And actually, there's if everyone wants to stand up, that's Architects at Health with us in the background. This is supported by, we are Women and Architecture Southern Branch and New Zealand Institute of Architecture Southern.
Now, just before we ask any questions, I'll let you know that the council officers have done some rewriting of the objectives in chapters 3 and 6. And also we have directed caucusing between the council officers and Queenstown Airport on objectives and policies in relation to the airport. We hope to get those today. Both of those things we will enable submitters who have been heard in the session to comment on by noon on Wednesday next week. I'm just giving you an advance warning of that, because I think, particularly in terms of your suggestions in relation to Queenstown Airport and the policies that affect them, you may want to look at those caucusing results and comment on those, as well as any changes to the objectives that may relate to what you've said.
Commissioner Sinclair, do you have any questions?
Yep. Yeah. Just in terms of the... objectives and policies. You've used the term wider Frankton. Could you clear what do you mean by wider Frankton?
Well, I think that this, in the plan, it talked about commercial hubs of Frankton. We're like thinking about Remarkables Park on one side, and we've got the 5 mile developments on the other side, and sort of linking those commercial hubs. But I think we feel as though Frankton is more than just those commercial hubs, and because those private land developers, those larger ones, you know, they have a lot of advocates for them, and they're working hard. But there's a lot of Frankton, the public space in Frankton, the right through to the incentive to the golf course, right through to those reserves around the edges. And there's a lot of smaller landowners between. You could go from the marina really, right the way around those edges, right up to the state highway on that side, which tends to get sort of left off because they don't have people advocating for them to the same extent. So we just think that that's a really important part of Frankton, and just to make sure it's not just left out. And I think the airport are not so keen on developing that area, but again, it's something which we feel as though it needs to be reconsidered. So, Frankton is more than just Remarkables Park. And
there's a huge waterfront. Look at the whole bay there.
Bridge going up the road to the marina. You mentioned the marina. So you go as far as the marina up Frankton Road?
Well,
we're just trying to put some boundaries.
Yeah, that's right.
The state highway, the northern side of the state highway.
Yeah, well, particularly we are sort of looking at it from the marina right the way around. We thought this could be an incredible mixed use. It could be a very vibrant place. You've got people who are participating at the event.
What about the north side of the state highway?
If you want to draw on the map, we're happy for you to draw on the map.
Yeah.
We're just trying to tie in with other, what other people have said. So
right.
we've had from the marina.
Well, I think fundamentally what we're saying is from the marina all the way around to the bridge,
mm-hmm.
and all the way up to the State Highway. So it's basically on the west side of State Highway 6. So that's a piece of land, I think, which is critical. But in saying that, all the public land on the event centre and the golf course is an incredibly important part.
And bound by the rivers and the lake, basically, but which includes all that land, where the sewage works are, and the other recreational land. I mean, it's huge, huge area.
That's what we talked about before, the two rivers. You've got the river boundaries,
mm-hmm.
State Highway, the north of the State Highway, up to the hill, to the bottom of the hill, maybe?
Yeah.
And then a follow-up question to that was, when you're referring to mixed use, what do you mean by the term mixed use?
I sort of feel as though there's opportunities. I mean, at the moment, like you've got opportunities where you could be walking from the event centre under the state highway, whatever, and you could be coming down through some sort of commercial, cafes, residential.
And the density is actually, if you've got denser wall-to-wall buildings, that's actually a better sound attenuation than dispersed, triple glazed, low-density residential.
It's an area that's got amazing amenity there, so you can put people. You can pack them in there to a high density because all they're going to do is walk out of their apartment and they're onto the trails and they've got the lake at their doorstep and they've got the event centre right next door to them.
They can go to school.
And they've got the high school right across here, the primary school right there. So,
walk to the supermarket.
So you're suggesting we need more high density for that? And this is just, are you suggesting that over the old Frankton area?
Well, I think we're suggesting it right because that is such a hub, and it's everything's there. And so we're saying, we can sustain a far higher population in that area.
We
just don't need these cars. We can produce a sustainable model.
So medium or high density?
Well, that's right.
High or
both.
What's wrong
with the tower then? I think
what we originally were thinking was that it could have a tad of mixed use associated with it, where it's not maybe just residential, or maybe.
It's not just residential, it's got some business, it's got some work from home, it's got some...
So can I clarify, at this stage you're talking about the entire wider Frankton, or are you talking about the old Frankton area down from the State Highway 6?
Well, I think we're saying the big area around that Frankton area is probably the better in many respects, because it is such a hub, Otherwise, if you don't put people around there, you've got to put them further away. You've got to be carved in. And so, essentially we're saying, in that area, whether it's on the north side of the road or down to the lake, we need to be...
Well, both sides of the airport. The airport probably sits in the middle, doesn't it? But probably both sides, because they both wrap around the water. You've got the school in the centre. You've got the hospital there. You've got a golf course. I mean, what's not to love about living in that area? It's sunny, it's warm, and the amenity's fantastic. So
basically,
it's the council serve in the middle of it. I mean, it's
kind of feels like there needs to be a plan for it. And the connections are really important, because in Queenstown, some of the connections have been cut off. The view shaft, the links, that stuff needs to be in the plan.
So does it need to be in this plan, or does there need to be in this plan a
going forward structure
plan?
It's part of the structure plan, but it can be in the...
It needs both.
I mean, the whole thing is there's a planning framework for Frankton is just really lacking, and it's really just being operated on a business as usual model. And that's why I said, we sort of just did some brainstorming and said, oh, what if it expands? And in fact, because of the airport being in the middle, what if Frankton sort of shifts with it being bisected by the river, and you actually had a community on both sides with the river and bridges in between, so that the hub becomes just on the other side of the airport.
Is what you're suggesting that
it's
is needed out there is something a bit like what happened with the development of the Waikato 2020 plan, where there was community involvement in establishing some sort of set of goals and development potential for that particular area.
Yes, well, I think practice come of age, and I think it's probably overtaken the thinking that came out in the, well, in the strategy, the 2007 strategy, it said, yes, that needs to be done.
Yes, that's right.
And that has not been done.
Yes. So what you're saying is that...
That step needs to be done before you can actually incorporate it into the plan, because that's the difficulty. You can't just say, oh, yes, medium density everywhere. There needs to be a logic behind that, which, brings in the urban design principles. Character, context, and develop a character for Frankton. Because, the words, everyone's been trying to seek words like, oh, it's a commercial hub, oh, no, it's a service hub, or it's this or that, but actually it is a community.
Yeah, it's so Frankton.
It's Frankton. Yeah. It's a wide Frankton.
Mm. Nothing further, thank you. Commissioner Cox?
Did you submit the plan change 35?
The airport. No, we didn't. We submitted strategic direction, economic direction, all sorts of things, but it's hard to submit on everything.
Yeah, it's quite a big important board up for Franklin. Everything you're talking about, I think, was addressed. Plan change 19, you do acknowledge plan change 19, not for all areas, but set out one of the zoning for Franklin in the internal area there.
Well, I think it's been pushed and pulled a bit, hasn't it? But again, Plan Change 19, I still don't think was done in consideration of the whole context of Franklin. And, it's this contextual, big picture thinking that really needs to be done in all the layers in between before you get to this district plan.
3.2.11, you've introduced this waterfront concept. Why have you done that?
Well, we get confused between Queenstown and Queenstown and Frankton. So I think when you say Queenstown waterfront, wider Frankton, and then we're talking about Queenstown, we know we're encapsulating both of them. Because I think, too, when you get to Wanaka and Three Parks gets developed, you'll start to get confusion between Wanaka and Three Parks. That's why I think Wanaka waterfront.
At the moment, we have Three Parks and Wanaka. If you say Wanaka waterfront, what about Upper Ardmore Street?
Well, I haven't seen how Wanaka's developing in terms of Three Parks. But when you call Wanaka that part and Three Parks separate, or you talk about Wanaka like that.
Well,
I guess they've said Wanaka Central, haven't they?
You push here about urban development. You talk about terms such as urban subdivision, urban development. And you're basically what I'm hearing say you don't think there should be any development in the rural area. Urban subdivision.
A new way of thinking is just to say no more subdivision in the rural area. I mean, it just takes all that sort of nuancing and sort of critique over what might be the capacity to absorb, or where is the cumulative effect, or when's the tipping point, years we've looked at.
Are you talking urban subdivision or just any subdivision?
Well, any subdivision. Make life very simple.
Okay.
Because we had this big discussion about what is urban.
Have you got a definition of urban development?
No, well, that's right. Who comes up with a definition of urban development? It becomes nuanced, nitpicked, argued, and, good planning, quality planning is very clear planning. We just say no development. What's wrong with the hiatus of 10 years of development in the rural area? Just say, we're going to concentrate on infilling these urban growth boundaries, which are huge, and we're going to infill them with really good, high-quality development. Yes,
you're drawing on the urban growth boundaries. Have you adjusted what was proposed?
We just made a suggestion for thinking about the framework. We're not saying it should be adjusted straight away, but we're saying that when you put a framework in Frankton, have you thought about bridges? And we actually have introduced, when we talk about infrastructure, where it says roads, we've said rivers, ferries, and boats, because and bridges and ferries. because that's actually a very important part, is where will these bridges and ferries go? And we're talking about the ferry from Calvin Heights to town. We're talking about the ferry from South Frankton, anything that might go around the river. I mean, if that's feasible, who would know? But bridges, gondolas, all those sorts of things.
From the airport to the town?
Airport to the town. Like, what's the real strategy for the airport to the town? Is it that they all hire a car and drive into town and park somewhere? Or is there another strategy? A better one?
Mr. Burt gave us advice that he does not believe there's a character, an urban character in Queenstown or Wanaka. From your submission just before, it sounded like you thought Horn Creek was actually integral to the character of Queenstown. Is there anything further that determines the character of Queenstown as opposed to just the mountains and the lake?
Well, Queenstown's got a fantastic intensity that the Queenstown Town Centre currently stands. I think people from out of other parts of New Zealand come here, and it's just got these fantastic narrow laneways, and it's got a great pedestrian.
It's a very fine grain, and that's built up historically because it was small tent sites, and so you've got these very small, tall, high buildings jammed in next one another.
And we've got that, because of our geographical constraints. And that's been key, because if we didn't have those geographical constraints here, it would just be spread right out like Invercargill.
So there is a character in your mind that could be defined and worked towards maintaining?
Or... I think it needs to be maintained, yeah, and enhanced. And, and that Horn Creek thing, it provides a fantastic edge, a green edge throughout, right up that gorge road. Particularly when you're looking at developing a high density areas,
six-story
area right up Gorge Road. I mean, it's just a fantastic idea. It's just that those edges and those places like Horn Creek, can provide fantastic pedestrian linkways as well as green zones, which people could filter out onto and walk into town. And I think if we can sort of they're just key things, and I think that they need to be sort of recognised and potentially even drawn on a map to give some direction.
And we have actually drawn them in later maps in different sections of the plan. We have actually tried to reinforce this, but of course this is where it gets captured in the strategic direction.
I've jumped to Frankton versus QAC issue. Is it possible, as architects, to design meaning or even identity so that it's... that they would be good to live in and not cause reverse sensory issues? Because I noticed you said minimise reverse sensory issues towards the airport, but naturally enough, Queenstown Airport doesn't want to be affected by reverse sensory issues, so can it actually limit it rather than minimise it by having it medium high density versus low density?
It is better, yes. You have connecting walls, you have better thermal insulation, you have better noise insulation.
I think it was the 2007 growth strategy that was referring to the twin centre.
Yes.
Concept.
Yes.
Do you feel that that's a relevant concept still that should perhaps be more part of the approach rather than fighting seems to be a...
Definitely talking about between the airport and the...
No, between Queenstown.
I think they're both distinct identities. Queenstown will always be Queenstown, and it's absolutely beautiful. I don't think there's a risk of tourists fleeing to Frankton and hubbing around the airport.
There's no need for the occupants of the CBD here to be feel insecure, I think, in terms of their commercial activities. There's a lot going on here, and there's always going to be a lot going on here.
Actually, there's one point I do want to make that I didn't emphasise, but one point says promote growth and tourism. And I just wondered where this word growth came from. I'm perfectly happy in promoting tourism. Do we need to promote growth in any area, given that we're growing anyway? We're actually managing growth. We're not trying to promote growth, because managing growth is our biggest issue, and if we're going to promote
promote growth in tourism, we're going to promote growth in all our issues, like affordable housing, airport, etc., etc., transport. So we've already got these issues. Why are we promoting further growth?
There's a difference between the visitor industry and tourism.
Well, I'm just saying we don't need to promote growth. We can support the tourist industry. We can do all sorts of other things. But why are we trying to grow these areas? Because
they're already growing.
Because they're already growing. And you only need to walk downtown and the landscape's quite full. It's not as if we've got a wind-blowing deserted landscape. We're quite full and we want to really manage that really well.
Well, what I'm getting at is there's a difference between visitor industry and the economy and tourism. Visitors could be here for 3 months doing education. Visitors could be here to do other economic activities.
Well, that's right.
To grow the economy and create high-paying jobs and things.
Well, that's why we're saying support higher-value jobs and industries. I agree with that. But why are we promoting tourism as low-paid work and it exacerbates our affordable housing? So I agree we support tourism, but why are we promoting growth in these areas? Where did that come from? I'm just trying to think, where did that come from? Promoting growth.
I want to try and answer that. Your first quality in all areas, you mentioned urban design panels, urban design principles. One of the designs of the PDP is to streamline it. Do you feel that urban design panels should be compulsory at some level? Because they're pretty much not. Can I just finish back? Sorry, Ms. Ritchie. And secondly, in terms of urban design principles, is it possible to include them in a way that does not mean a huge expansion of reports required, cost required, time required to get a good result? I.e., can you encapsulate urban design principles and easily define it in assessment?
Design's an iterative process, though. I mean, good design comes out of the dialogue between parties. So, you know, to just have these little reports and just, you know, think they'll scaffold their way to the top, or layer their way to the top, they actually scaffold their way to the top in terms of an answer. So, probably not, it's my answer, but quality.
I think when we are building up a high density area, the quality of these buildings is going to become, far, far more important, because we just don't want to have a town or a city with a whole lot of cheap, not necessarily cheap, but of low quality.
Balcony less, living space less, windowless sort of environments, unless these things are recognised as valuable assets to your living environment.
Yeah. So the corporate submission from council that was put in spoke of developing residential design guidelines. How important do you think that is, and B, at which stage of the process should it feed in? Is it something that should be fed in prior to the finalisation of the residential chapters?
Yeah, well, I certainly think residential guidelines is very important. It's all going to feed into potentially a framework which could lead on to urban design panel. I don't know what that threshold is.
So what is the cost, really? Well, the cost to the community of going through an urban design review for some of these significant sites in the density we're talking about. Now, once you have a degree of development done, then you've got some models for what is seen as good development, but until that happens,
Going back to my question there, urban design panels at what level? Low density, high density, six stories once it's over per square metres?
We
answered
that specifically in some of the other
chapters. Yeah. I can't give you the exact number there, threshold. But I can say, I've sat on urban design panels for a lot of years in this town, and invariably, I think, you've got a group of architects who are there really to help the applicant, and essentially we're not there to deconstruct their proposal, but, at the end of the day, I think it adds a lot of value to their proposals as well. So, you could say that maybe it may slow it down for 4 weeks or 8 weeks, but the value they get out of having a group of local architects, landscape architects sitting there, helping them with their proposal is just, it's invaluable.
But then it's the value just of the community. It's the value of the quality of the built environment, which is going to stay, which is the important part of it.
Okay. I don't have any questions. Commissioner Robinson, I've checked with him, he doesn't. So thank you, that was very helpful.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Bunn.
Okay, hello, I'm Philip Dunham. This is my sister Debbie beside me and my brother Stephen on the other side here. We have two other siblings, Susan and Carol, who are unable to be here today. Our family owns 150 hectares on Morgan Ferry Road, in our junction.
Can you just repeat that, please? Where was that?
Morgan Ferry Road, in our junction. And we're third generation on the farm. 2 years ago, during a family meeting on the future of the farm, we all came to the conclusion that the time was approaching. We came to the conclusion that the time was approaching when we need to change from totally livestock farming and move on.
Sorry, how long ago was that?
That was a couple of years ago, yeah. We would each like to keep a piece, but maintaining the farm as a farm is simply impossible. We wish to remain living in an area which is changing, but remain with changes that we can live with. All our advice was that if we took the option to sell one or more parts of the farms, it was almost a 100% probability a developer would be the likely purchaser. In fact, one of our neighbouring properties has been sold to developers and another neighbouring property was on the market, being marketed as potential development land. At the time it was on the market, I had three different prospective purchasers come and ask my reaction if they bought to develop. With this in mind, we employed Southern Planning and BNSB to come up with a plan to show what potential the farm has to absorb other classifications of zoning already employed in the QLDC district plan, i.e. rural residential, rural lifestyle and visitor accommodation. The brief was that it must be a development we could live with, that it maintained the rural aspect of Morgan Ferry Road, and that once developed, it did not give scope for further subdivision by the new owners so that we and our neighbours had certainty. We wanted it to complement and reflect the New Zealand Cycle Trail, which runs through the farm. At the time it was put in, we were told that it was for the economic benefit of the nation. We submitted our plan under this district plan review last year. Last week our father died. Both him and mum were great supporters of the plan, but Dad's death gives much more relevance. Given this background, and the fact that we have one time slot today and two time slots tomorrow, we've listed bullet points on what we see as challenges forcing both farming and development in the Wakata Basin. We would like to put these to you today, get any feedback and questions from you, and discuss them in more depth tomorrow. Problems facing farming in the Wakata as we see it. QLDC and ORC rates per stock unit are extremely high compared to other farming areas in the country. Transport. Bringing goods to the farm and transporting stock away is expensive, as there are few farmers here and there's no combining of costs. These extra costs are borne exclusively by us. Our closest transport operator used to be in Arrowtown, then Cromwell, now it is Upper Clutha, based in Wigate. We have to be a finishing operation. We cannot breed because the distance to market. When the deer sales at Cromwell sale yards ceased approximately 10 years ago, our price per head to return for our deer dropped significantly, as our only market became finishing, i.e. strap to slaughter. There are no stock and stage agents here. At one time we had two firms, Wrightson's and Dalgetty's, both with agents based in the Wakarapa Basin. 18 years ago our local agent left, so our closest agent was based in Waka. Now, however, our silver firm stock agent is based in the Manitoto. If we were with the Alliance, he would be based in Winton. We have 120 day plus winter here. This is significantly longer than even Southland, meaning we have to produce a lot more winter feed to carry stock through winter. Locally, our farm in Morgan Free Road is free draining and old riverbeds. We dig down to gravel. It is also the driest part of the Wakarapa Basin. This was recognised by the old timers when the irrigation scheme was first set up. From McDonnell Road down through Morgan Free Road, the farms were allocated 1.5 head per water per acre as opposed to 1 head per acre throughout the rest of the Wakarapa Basin. Rabbits, where do I start? We have a massive problem with rabbits. Traditional control methods have been poisoning, 1080 being the most effective by far, shooting the most popular. Neither of these are compatible with the cycle trail which runs through the farm. Any development in the area should include some form of rabbit-proof fencing, and I'm meaning this as broadly in the Wakarapa Basin, to at least control their movement. Also, the ORC, is washing their hands of rabbit control. Does the council or this panel have any inclination of the effect this is going to have on the area? Tourist constraints. Tourism is being encouraged in the Wakarapa. This is not really compatible with traditional farming, particularly for us being deer farmers, although it would still be relevant for both sheep and beef. The cycle trail runs through the farm. A fawning percentage was consistently for 20 years prior to the trail, averaging between 92 and 94%. We were very proud to be in the top 10% of deer farms in New Zealand with this. Since the trail has opened, it has dropped significantly. Our highest percentage in the last 4 years has been 87%. The incidence of finding dead, abandoned fawns has increased noticeably. This is due to the daily disturbance of people on bikes, walking, and uncontrolled dogs, also illegal shooting from the cycle trail. Flight paths. On Thursday, for example, helicopters were doing a circuit transporting people from Millbrook to rafting at the mouth of the Yarra River. Stop getting to it, but if there are any stresses happening to them at the time, it does disturb them. We border the Kauai River. Rafters often exit at the old Morgan Ferry site and dock area. Deer stalkers have decided there's somewhere they can target shoot and sight in their powerful rifles. This Easter weekend we have the Wakatipu pending there, in the raw. This is a dangerous time to be around deer. We only got notice of this last night and we'll have to move stock to accommodate this, which affects our stock management program. In the last 3 years, three of our neighbours have started bed and breakfasts in their home, bringing in people who have no idea how to react around deer. This is a tourist area. The Wakarapa Basin is a rural lifestyle area. Tourists want to come here and experience what they perceive to be a farming experience. In reality, this is not a working farm experience. They need to pet animals that they can touch and play with. This requires small numbers of animals who have high interaction with people. This is not traditional farming. Other random matters I'd like to raise. Does this panel have any inclination of the value of the irrigation scheme in the basin? If it stops or something happens to it, there will be a lot of water bores and groundwater aquifers that would run dry, run much slower or even dry. Do you have any knowledge of what's happening in this basin at the moment with water? A good example of this is the levels Mill Creek has been running into Lake Hayes this summer. Arrowtown is one of the more popular and expensive areas in the district. The older generation have steadfastly rejected any development, yet the young generation families are desperate to get housing in Arrowtown. If the council is to continue down the route of limiting Arrowtown's urban growth boundary, then it is imperative to create a viable housing community at that end of the district, that is detached but close to Arrowtown. Morven Ferry is as out of sight as you can get on the floor of the Wakaran Basin, warm, sunny, flat to undulating land. We have legal easements in place to take water from the Quarra River, therefore we're not depleting any streams or aquifers. In the future, the Quarra River could also provide potential future transport to Frankton and Queenstown via ferries. Are you planning for the next 10 years at least you're planning for the next 10 years. In that time, you're going to have to develop other small satellite commercial industrial hubs, as the Frankton Flats is developing very quickly. Remember, it is only 20 years since the Frankton Flats was farmland, and project its growth a further 10 to 20 years. Arrow Junction is a logical place for this when you live at Arrow end of the basin. It could service Lake Hayes, Arrowtown through to Gibson. Queenstown High Density Area. Great idea, but please do not assume this is a silver bullet. I own a business in this zone. Last year we signed a pretty watertight 20-year lease on our building, so nothing's going to happen on that site for at least 20 years.
Now, when you come back tomorrow, are you proposing to add more, or...?
We will add more. There's a few things that have come up through the listening to the previous hearings that we think that we can address.
I'm just wondering whether it might be more useful, partly because I'd like to have lunch.
Yeah.
And also whether we could... if you could give that new brief form to Ms. Chalmers, if she could copy it for us, and
yeah,
then we could be more focused on our questions of you tomorrow, rather than sort of make it up from the notes we've taken. Would that suit you?
Yep.
And I presume that we will be seeing more of you later in the process.
Yep.
I think you have submissions to do.
We have submissions in, yes. Yeah.
And probably in the rural zones as well. So we'll just try and stick at the higher level matters at the moment. The information you've given us so far has been helpful. Is that satisfactory for you?
Yep. Is there any ideas there you want us to develop further tomorrow?
Anything? Is there anything that you would like to raise?
Mm-hmm.
I would quite like to know just the irrigation scheme, if you could just give us a volumetric measure over the year of what that might provide.
Yeah.
Throughout
the district. Mm-hmm. Okay. Would you be able to also highlight on these top level chapters if there's any areas you want, you think we should be
seeing
or supporting what's there? Is that what we're up to?
Yeah, so there are these 3 points.
I realise it may be a bit technical for you.
the main problem is that we've just been completely out. The last 2 days, which has been at least.
My family just went through a recent bereavement, so
yeah.
I understand that you're right.
Is it possible, we've actually have altered what we written, slightly what we wrote out, just listening to what you were doing in the when we had morning tea, what Tim and Vanessa had asked us just to maybe expand just a little bit more, because from the questions that you asked them earlier, can we just go home and just
email
alter this and email it through?
Yes,
mm-hmm. To copy
yeah.
It? Is that, I think
but
that would be better from our perspective.
Yes, that would be more helpful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right on.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
I'll do until
email address.
Do you have a little
Yep, I'm just about to.